From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in Forum's next hour, we meet the two stars of the musical show Beautiful, which focuses on the life and music of Carole King. It's presently playing at the Curran Theater and is clearly Broadway bound. Then at 10:30, best-selling novelist Richard North Patterson will join us to talk about his new book, a novel called Loss of Innocence, all about the year America changed in nearly every imaginable and unimaginable way. Join us for Forum next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Tonight you're mine completely. You give your love so sweetly. Tonight the light of love is in your eyes. But will you love me tomorrow?
Well, those of you who remember your oldies, that's Will You Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles. Songwriter Carole King scored her first major number one hit with that song when she was 17 years old. And along with her then husband, Jerry Goffin, the duo known as Goffin and King went on to compose a string of hits, including Take Good Care of My Baby by Bobby V, The Locomotion by Little Eva, and You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman by Aretha. The new musical, Beautiful, explores Carole King's life from her prodigal rise to fame to her painful divorce from Goffin while showcasing her songs. Actors Jesse Mueller and Jake Epstein join us in studio to talk about starring as the couple. And as I said to them before they came on the air, they both did a terrific job. They're plum parts and they're headed for Broadway. So congratulations are in order here for both of you. You know, you both have way. I knew Jerry Goffin slightly and had some contact with Carole King. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you've been told this before. There are resemblances. I mean, not only in the way you sing in your case, Jesse, but also in your presence and your looks and so forth.
That's so interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, me too.
We haven't had much contact with.
Why not? We should, right? Well, recently we all got to meet Jerry, and it was really interesting.
It was
to be playing someone that's still alive. You know,
yeah, special moment. Yeah, it really was.
Well, they liked your performance. I think the read up I read said that Carole King left after the first act, but she said it was just too painful seeing her life unfold. Although. You know, Margaret Russell was just here. You were listening to the program we were mm-hmm, doing. Yeah. She saw the show. She happened to see the show. Mm-hmm. I saw the show. She said, it's got some sitcom in it. And it probably does have some sitcom in it. And yet at the same time, it's a serious story about a couple who were enormously talented.
Yeah.
And, you know, what an honor to play them. I mean, and to perform their songs and to sing their songs.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the thing, like you mentioned, I think that's so fascinating about the story and why it's landing with people is that there's this amazing pop music that people know and love and their favorite songs. And then to see it in the context of what was going on with this couple and these real people and what they were actually going through, I think just sheds new light on the whole thing.
Well, it's two couples, really, because it was very clever of Doug McGrath, who wrote the whole thing, to take this other couple that they were friends with, Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, who also wrote a string of extraordinary hits, and make it into a kind of a pleasant competition.
Well, one of the things that I think is really fun and successful about the show is that Doug McGrath, who's has written a lot of comedy, wrote for SNL. He wrote Bullets Over Broadway with Woody Allen, which is one of my favorite movies. So he tells this serious story in a really enjoyable way. It is very funny. It's also, you know, very moving and dramatic, but it is, you said it's sort of, there's sitcom elements to it. It's very entertaining, very fun to be part of.
You get a lot out of Barry Mann's hypochondria, that's for sure.
You get a lot of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it does have humor in it, and it's got some real touches. It's a little Carole King Jewish mother, you know, almost out of a cartoon, but nevertheless, some funny stuff on that score. And it really held the audience spellbound. I mean, especially a lot of the nostalgia. I mean, it's a kind of hit machine of oldies because Don Kirshner was producing all these great oldies at the time, not only by both songwriting teams, but also by all of these writers, mainly Jewish kids, actually, who are writing in many cases
for black artists. Yeah.
It's a fascinating story, that time in history, because it was this floor in 1650 Broadway, this building in New York, where we call it a songwriting factory, where Don Kirshner brought in all these teenagers to write hits for teenagers who were listening to music, and they wrote all of the number one hits of the time. So it's
amazing. It was a huge idea that he thought of that. I mean, it was different from what was happening in the Brill Building. It was its own. It was its own thing, and
Motown Hitsville, kind of a white composer version of Motown.
It was kind of, yeah. It was a lot like that.
I have to tell you though a couple things. I'm just curious about Jerry Goffin has. I don't want to give too much of the plot away here, but he has some serious problems, and there's a scene with him up on a high building contemplating suicide. I mean, you had to play that very dramatically. The story used to be that it was LSD, that he had had but it's presented as a mental breakdown or nervous breakdown.
Uh-huh. I mean, I've had a lot of talks with Doug about, in a musical, there's only so much time to tell a really good, simple story. And so, what was happening in real life, Jerry Goffin was later diagnosed with bipolar disorder and, yes, had several sort of breakdowns when he was younger and was also experimenting with LSD and drugs.
Well, almost everyone was at the time.
There was a lot of things going on, and it alludes to all of those things without sort of drowning the whole story in that.
I think also, now I'm a rock trivialist. I mean, that's one thing that will associate me with talking about news and everything, but this is one subject I actually know something about. I think Little Eva, who did Locomotion, was actually Carole King's cleaning lady, not her babysitter.
I believe it was the babysitter.
All right, we'll have to
double check. I was going to say, we should place bets on this.
It's a babysitter in the musical.
But from what I recall from her book also, I mean, and I believe in her book she talks about this. I mean, she and Jerry knew she could sing. It wasn't a total surprise. Yeah. But I'm blanking now. I think, I mean, she was around, and I think she'd done some demos at 1650, but and that's how they got to know her. But I'm pretty sure she was the babysitter.
Well, you got all the great hits in this, and like I say, it's a feast of oldies. Why not more Tapestry music? Do you know?
You know, that's an interesting question, and it's the interesting thing when you, the creation of a new musical. It's fascinating that they ever happen. It's one of the most unique art forms. And like Jake, like you were talking about before, the decisions that you have to make about what you choose to put in. I mean, any adaptation of a real life story, whether it's a novel or a movie or a play. I mean, you have to make these decisions about what goes in and what isn't used and what's going to be most dramatically satisfying.
It all comes down to the story that everyone wanted to tell as well. I think they wanted to lead up to Tapestries being the sort of the climax
and the arrival point. But
let's do things a little backward here. Let's hear a cut actually from Tapestry, and this is It's Too Late. Carole King wrote this in her 1971 album Tapestry. The lyrics are actually by Tony Stern, but the song plays during the musical when her marriage is falling apart.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is changing, or maybe we just stopped trying. And it's too late, baby, now it's too late. Though we really did try to make it. Something
Well, if you love this old music the way I do, you got a real treat in store for you, because Jesse Mueller really does Carole King wonderfully. And Jake Epstein, and Jerry Goffin wasn't much of a singer, but you bring your voice into this as well.
Thank you.
I know, it's nice to get to hear him sing.
Yeah, it was very nice to hear you sing. Plus, you have these kind of, I guess you call them faux groups, reproducing the Shirelles, the Drifters,
sure.
Neil Sedaka,
yeah.
The Righteous Brothers, and actually sounding like you guys. I mean, like you sound like Carole King. They sound like those groups and those performers.
Oh, thanks. Well, we tried really hard to find the right blend of, you know, we didn't want to do mimicry. Our music director, Jason Howland, is an incredible guy and kind of a musical genius. And I think we all, as the process went on, we all realized what was really important is that we feel like we give audiences the essence of what the music is and what the people sounded like while bringing our own thing to it. So if that's the way it comes across, that's great. You know, that's kind of what we're striving for.
Well, there's a play by Tom Stoppard called The Real Thing, and in it he's interviewed and he's asked what his favorite song of all time is, and he's a kind of intellectual and famous playwright, the character
in the play. Yeah, it's an
amazing play. And he says, he's embarrassed to say this, he says, it's a song we're about to hear here, which may also be one of my favorite all-time songs. Hmm. And Danny, it's cut number 6.
You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips, and there's no tenderness like grief falls in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, but baby, baby, I know it. You call.
Well, people are probably thinking about Tom Cruise, but that's White Soul. And that shot to the top of the charts in 1965. It was written by Carole King and Jerry Goffin's longtime friends. I'm reading this wrong. The songwriting competitors I mentioned before, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil wrote it, and they wrote it with Phil Spector, of course.
Yes.
And that was performed by the Righteous Brothers. But those two guys who do the Righteous Brothers.
They're awesome. Kevin Duda and Josh Davis.
Is that the only number they do, or are they in other parts?
Oh, they're another.
One of them is Kevin is Neil Sedaka.
Neil Sedaka.
Josh is Nick.
He plays another character that you see sort of later on in the play in Carol's band.
Yeah, we watch that number from the wings every
it's
night.
It's fun.
And
we get to
kind of sing along because it's great.
It's a great song, and there are so many great songs in this. Tell us a little bit about your careers. Maybe give us a kind of. Quick crystallization, how you came
first,
to these
Jake.
Roles.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm from Toronto. I started doing my first job. I was the Artful Dodger in the Cameron Mackintosh tour of Oliver. And from there, I was on a TV show called Degrassi for several years. And from there, I started doing a lot of theater. I was in the
We had Sarah Polley on. In fact.
Oh, my God. I'm such a huge fan of hers.
Yeah. But you
did lots of theater and.
Do you always know you wanted to be a musical theater guy?
No, I actually love plays and I never wanted to do musicals. And I, besides singing in rock bands, I never sang when I was younger. And then got cast in Spring Awakening.
And you were Spider-Man on Broadway.
I was Spider-Man on Broadway. So it's funny because I've been doing so much music theater, but it wasn't what I set out to do. But that's sort of where all these opportunities came from. And I love music theater. And
And so Jesse,
that's it.
All that piano playing you had to do somewhat, against your grain, so to speak, that your parents made you do. It all
I know. I'm
off,
glad they did. I'm glad they did. I was
she
not,
sits down, I
not a
mention.
Very happy second grader.
She sits down at the piano, and it begins with her at Carnegie Hall with you playing the piano. And
it does. It does. It was a huge challenge, but hopefully it's all coming together and it all works. People get, it's amazing sometimes the show starts and, barely nothing's happening, but the lights come up in that scene in Carnegie Hall. And I think the whole design team has done such a brilliant job that the first image you see is very satisfying because I've got the Carole King hair. I mean, we're sitting at the grand piano. It's sometimes people applaud. It's a nice moment because I know they're not applauding for me. They're applauding for her and what they came to see and that they're seeing that image that they know and love so much.
Yeah, but you've got a Tony nomination for your first Broadway show, and you come from a family of actors.
I do.
Right? Yeah, I've got a little scope on you. But let's think about the fact that the way to get, you know the old joke, the way to get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice.
Yeah, right. Okay, there you go. By the way, if you'd like to join us in this conversation, if you saw Beautiful, or if you love the music of Carole King, or if you want to talk to our two guests, Jesse Mueller and Jake Epstein, who are the stars of Carole King, playing respectively Carole King and Jerry Goffin, you can join us. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we'd certainly like to hear from you, especially if you got to see the production. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. If you want to say something about the music you've been hearing or say something about the production, if you happen to see it, you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. Let me look at a couple of emails here. Peter writes, I wonder why no one ever wrote the male's response to Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? It would be a fantastic duet. Something like, Tonight I'm Yours Completely, I Gave My Love So Sweetly, You Saw the Light of Love in My Eyes, Yes, I Will Still Love You Tomorrow.
Aww.
And Sam writes, I had the great experience to see Beautiful, and it was one of the few plays in which I felt truly inspired. The mix of humor and biography was wonderful. I want to thank both your guests for their performances, and if they get the chance, thank Miss King. And we heard a little of this earlier. This is the first number one hit by Jerry Goffin and Carole King. It was done by the Shirelles, and here it's performed by that 60s group, the Shirelles, number four cut, Will You Love Me Tomorrow? Okay, it's actually probably serendipitous that we heard Carole King's version of that singing it on Tapestry, because the original version was by the Shirelles, and it was, shall we say, much more speeded up. So let's hear a little of that. This is... You know, when that song, well, you sit down there at the piano, that opens things up, Jesse, but when that song goes off, it's like Jersey Boys when they start singing Sherry. There's something just electric about that song that lights up, and the ending of this musical. I mean, it just lifts you up.
Oh, good. You know, it's cool, actually, we got to hear both versions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It's fascinating.
They wrote,
she wrote the demo,
and then she... wanted to write it for the Shirelles, the way that what was popular in that day, which is more like the second version.
Well, didn't Don Kirshner say, we have to have a song for the Shirelles?
The follow-up hit to the Shirelles,
Yeah, and that's how that writing happened. They would come in with the group that needed their new hit, and then Donnie would put it out there, and then these kids would, like
and
scramble
it would happen within,
to make these hits happen.
And put it out there.
Have you met Kirshner? Did you meet him? Or did he come to the show, do you know?
No, we haven't gotten to meet Donnie yet. We got to meet Jerry.
I thought you must have met him because you're calling him Donnie. I thought
it's funny. It's because in our play, I think we call him Donnie because in
we
our
think
play
we know him
he's Donnie to us because of Jeb Brown who plays Don Kirshner. He's Donnie to us, so that's our relationship with him. If I met him, I'd call him Don.
Let's hear from our listeners. Sandy, you're up first here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Jesse? You are amazing. That we saw the performance Friday night. we took our 14-year-old son. He loves music, but he's never been introduced to this music before. And he came home, and he found it on Spotify. I mean, he just kept on singing and singing. And then I could not believe your piano playing. And then also with the Righteous Brothers, with that piece, it opened up an opportunity for us to share with our son's stories. I grew up in Southern California, mm-hmm. and I had a friend who had who dated the guitarist for the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I could talk to him about that kind of intimacy of performers like that and how big they were. And so just thank you so much for inspiring us. And it was a musical that I've never heard so much music in.
Sandy, I think it's great that you took your 14-year-old. I was saying to Jesse and Jake before we went on the air that I went to a matinee and weren't that many young people visible there. I guess they're coming more to nighttime performances. But for young people to enjoy this music and to be essentially introduced to it, I think is terrific. And thank you so much for
that call.
It's
such a great thing. Thank you.
Another caller, Alicia, calling us from up in Canada, just Jake's home country.
Hi, I saw the show. You were both incredible. Jesse, I cannot believe your performance. I would be shocked if you didn't get nominated for a Tony.
You're very kind. Thank you.
What I wanted to ask was, when you think about playing Carol, how much do you think about her as a person, and how much do you think about her as a fictional, just a character that you're portraying?
Oh, that's a great question. I think early on it was somewhat divided for me, but throughout the rehearsal process, I think my viewpoint of it has changed. You know, because people ask a lot, you know, what's it like to play someone real and what's it like to play, you know, just a character. But I think at the end of the day, you always have to treat a character like they're a real person. So I just it's been a challenge, but I've just had to find my way. It sounds so actory. Find my way into it. But it's true. I try not to divide it so much anymore, because after you've, you know, done the work with your fellow actors and your designers and everything, and you've put in that time in rehearsal, then you always have to try to let it go.
You found just do your way, Jesse. Rest assured. You found your way.
Well, thank you.
Let me thank the caller, and let's get Charles on here. Charles, you were at the opening?
I was at the opening. Hi, Jesse. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I just wanted to say my partner David and I were there last Saturday, and what you were saying about when you come out at Carnegie Hall in the beginning and everyone wanting to clap afterwards, we did. And I just wanted I don't have a question or anything, but I just wanted to say the show was great. The music was great. It's my mother's music, my parents' music, but I loved it. So it took me back to when I was a kid again. So.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot to us. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Tim from Santa Clara writes, I love the show. The performances were spot on. I recommended it to my team at a staff meeting just this morning. But I was pretty surprised to notice that You've Got a Friend was cut from the Friday night performance. What gives?
Ooh, what gives? You know, like we were saying before, I think that the production team, we're definitely still trying to find a place for You've Got a Friend. I mean, this is what we call, this is our out-of-time tryout. And
you know,
we've been so lucky to be here.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
Because I honestly thought it was going to be played.
Yeah.
When Goffin comes to see her at Carnegie Hall, that's the place you could have You've Got a Friend.
It makes it's interesting.
We had it right after that one.
We've had it in two different spots since being here, and it's such a beautiful, iconic song, but it's very slow. It's hard to keep the energy going in a musical like this, and so I think it will be in it at some point.
That's part of the challenge, is finding the right spot for it. Because, I mean, the canon that we have available is so incredible.
It is incredible. And here's one from that canon, beautiful. We're going out with the name of the production, which won her 4 Grammys in 1972 on Tapestry. It's the title song of the musical. Carole King singing Beautiful. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Jake. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.